This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
I'll tell you this, I would not want to be in the shoes of Texas running backs coach Stan Drayton coming into the 2019 season, except for maybe the paycheck. The paycheck I could live with. What is that guy getting paid as the associate head coach at the University of Texas and running backs coach? I forget. It's probably somewhere close to $1 million. So pretty good money for a guy that hadn't really done a whole lot of much ever since he got to Texas. You remember when Stan Drayton got here with Tom Herman? Tom Herman basically talked about him like he was the ace in the hole. He was the star of the whole staff. He talked about Ezekiel Elliott, what he was able to do with him. He talked about, you know, during his time at Ohio State, even after Ohio State, when he went to the Chicago Bears, what he was able to do with Jordan Howard as a rookie. These are all players that Stan Drayton points to and says, you know, my hand in their development caused this and that, you know, X and Y. And Tom Herman, whenever he first came to Texas, made no bones about the fact that Stan Drayton at some point was going to be a great college head coach, started to lay seeds that maybe he wouldn't be at Texas that long. And what the hell have we seen from him so far? I think it's more likely at this point that Stan Drayton gets fired than he gets picked off as a head coaching candidate. And the reason why is Tom Herman, via our Anwar Richardson at orangebloods.com, Tom Herman told his staff that, look, if you're one of the most elite coaches in the country with your position group or with your, with your side of the football, you don't have to worry about getting fired. Nobody has to worry about getting fired. If you're elite, you don't have to worry about it. What has Stan Drayton done to show me that he's elite? His rotations are bad. He never lets one running back get the hot hand. The only thing that we can really point to say, like, look, Stan Drayton did a good job with this was landing Keontae Ingram and being able to show a little bit of development in Keontae Ingram through last year as a freshman. With that being said, he never let him get rolling. It was too much. Too much shuffling in and out. And it's like, no matter what, it's always going to be a commitment to a committee. And as far as the actual coaching going, it's not like Texas has been a good running school under Drayton. Even once Herb Hand got here and the offensive line got good, you can't tell me, oh, Alex, the offensive line was bad. I'll tell you, you know what? This is the best offensive line last year at Texas that we've seen since I started doing the deep dig. And that was like 6 years ago. It's the best offensive line that we've seen in this decade. What do we get out of Drayton? Bupkis. And here's the thing. The recruiting hasn't been good. And why I would not want to be him this year is because, look, this staff behind the scenes has made no bones about the fact that the 2020 running back Zach Evans is the biggest priority that they've had this year. Maybe that would have been the biggest priority last year. Probably the biggest priority of Tom Herman's era at Texas. And when you're the top recruit in the whole nation, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a while, but I want to finish this thought. When you're the top recruit in the whole nation, and the staff is going all in on you, and you're from the state of Texas, and from the very jump, it seems like Texas should be in it, maybe even in the catbird seat. Whew. You don't pull that thing off, man. Like, you get a meeting like Peter Gibbons and everybody else at Inatech got with the Bobs, where they kind of say, like, what would you say you do here? You know? What would you say you do here? You got to close on Zach Evans. And I got to see Zach Evans last weekend at the Under Armour All-American Camp down there in Houston. I say got to see him. What I got to see was I got to see his ass walking around and not taking part in any drills, because who the hell is going to take part in drills when you're the number one prospect in the nation? You go to those camps because you want to be invited to the Under Armour All-America game, and you can't get invited to the game unless you go to the camp, because they got to see you in person and make sure you're not a fictitious recruit like we just recently had. So probably everybody's on high alert because of that. No. But they want to see, they want to make sure, like, you know, like you say you're 6 feet tall. Are you 6 feet tall? Come get measured, you know, like, let us see you against these other players. Let us be like, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, the dirty little recruiting secret behind all this is that maybe that's even secondary. The most important thing is they get the B-roll footage for the game. And what B-roll footage is that's the stuff like during the game, whenever a kid's giving his announcement, doing his goddamn hat dance, you know, putting one hat here, grabbing for one, grabbing for the other, juking out, reaching for the hat and putting it on. And then, of course, it's Alabama or LSU. But whenever they're talking about the player, they'll have some like clips from his high school games, and then they'll have the B-roll footage from the camps, wherever this kid's decked out in his Under Armour gear. It shows close-ups of his feet wearing the Under Armour cleats. You know, he's running back and forth. He's doing the karaoke drill. He's amongst all the others at this camp. There are ex-NFL coaches like the Jeff Blakes of the world getting up in their faces like, we will protect this house or whatever they, you know, we are, whatever it is that, you know, all of that corporate bullshit, right? They need that prepackaged in as B-roll for the production of the actual Under Armour All-American game. And so Zach Evans probably had to put, I mean, he had to put on the cleats and wear the Under Armour gear and go through this stuff where he just like runs over a couple of bags and you know, does some ladder drills, and then he's like, peace out. What the hell am I here to prove? Got 100 offers. You know, what am I here to prove? Just stand straight, man. You gotta close on him because Herman wants him bad, and the running back recruiting has, you know. Look, you can't blame Stan Drayton for what's happened with Darian Brown, the kid out of Georgia, Buford, Georgia. And thankfully, it looks like what's going on with him is he's feeling better. Not feeling better. I mean, he was in ICU. It's more than just feeling better. He's coming back into health from everything that we've heard. And I don't have any inside source on that. That's just from following what his dad has said on Twitter. But his dad seems like he's been pretty transparent. But I mean, there have been recruiting misses at the running back position. And that thing's gotten awful thin, man. Tristan Houston, he's gone. Kyle Porter, he's gone. You know, you got Kirk Johnson, who's going to graduate. I mean, this is a Tony Carter, gone. This is a deal where it's Keyonte Ingram, it's Daniel Young, it's Kirk Johnson. You know, for this upcoming year. And you know, we've talked about it on the previous pods before, but it's a thin running back position. Like it's Zachary Evans or bust in 2020, and Stan Drayton has got to get it done. His career at Texas might ride on it. And can you imagine your career riding on the whims of a 17-year-old kid in recruitment? And maybe whenever you bitch about how much these college football coaches make, you know, take that into consideration. The years of your life that just come, I mean, God damn, like the years of your life that just come off. Think, is this kid going to come to Texas? Like, what are the coaches are talking to him? Gee, you just bang your head against the wall. I mean, whew. I'm sure it's hard enough dealing with a teenage kid when it's your own kid. Imagine having to deal with somebody else's kid and your career rides on their decisions. But that's the way it is for, that's the way it is for Stan Drayton. And I'll just say this. I like Texas's chances right now with Zach Evans after getting to talk to him at that event. And after reading what Jason kind of said about it, here's the thing. He's not going to commit until the very end of the process. He's having a ton of fun. And why would you? Right? It's like he told me at Under Armour camp. Like, he didn't say it exactly like this, but the way that I summed it up to him, he said, that's exactly what I meant. And I just said, oh, all right, so what you're saying is like, you need to take all the time that you can, because that way you can collect all the information possible, because you'd be foolish to make this big a decision without having all of the information that you could possibly gather that was available to you. And since you have these people willing to wait on you, why not get all the information? And he said, that's exactly right. Why not wait to get all the information? So that's what he's going to do. He's not going to sign on the first National Signing Day. He's going to sign on the second National Signing Day, and he will play the hat dance game. And it's going to be Zachary Evans reaching for this hat, reaching for this hat, maybe finally grabbing this hat. And with every single move he makes, Stan Drayton's heart's going to quiver. Okay, I'm going to the Combine, and I'll be leaving on Tuesday, so I'm recording this on Monday. I did a little bit of a breakdown on Orange Bloods, just of my kind of, this could be an abbreviated version of the pod, but I kind of wanted to go through this breakdown I did over on Orange Bloods of my Combine expectations for each one of the five attendees. Defensive end Charles Omenihu, wide receiver Lil Jordan Humphrey, cornerback Chris Boyd, cornerback Devontae Davis, and linebacker Gary Johnson. And to be clear, before we even start, that's sort of the pecking order that I see of them coming into this thing beforehand, as far as probably how they're seen by NFL teams. I think that there could be certain movement in that hierarchy and pecking order with what happens during the week, what transpires, but... Oh, excuse me, this damn cedar. Can I still blame it on cedar? Maybe it's just kids. I don't know. It's like something in my chest. But cedar should be over by now. I don't see these trees blowing quite like they were, but the allergies here, man, in Central Texas just never, ever die, especially in Western Travis County. So, yeah, just busy times. I'll leave on Tuesday for the Combine. We'll start getting head coaching interviews with the NFL head coaches on Wednesday and Thursday. The players will start coming through and interviewing with the national media on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I'll be back here on Sunday doing a bunch of work on Sirius across a few different channels for my combine sort of reactions and takeaways from the wide receiver, running back, quarterback, tight end groups. And of course, while I'm there in Indy, my job for Orange Bloods is going to be making sure to get transcribed all of the interviews that the Texas kids do with the national media for their first time meeting the national media, how they hold up doing that, and also just any behind the scenes buzz that I can possibly pick up. It's a little bit harder to talk to scouts and evaluators and folks like that at the combine simply because you're not in the stands with them. You're not, around in the same hotel with them, guaranteed to be in the same hotel with them like you are at the Senior Bowl. And generally, the scouts have a lot more work to do in the week of the combine, just with, the setting up the interviews, making sure that they're there for the drills. They take down all their own measurements in all these different drills, keep all their own records, etc. So a lot of times, it's harder to, if you want to talk with scouts, you got to know these guys and like invite them out to dinner and stuff when you know that they're not in team meetings, and those things go late into the night. But I'm hoping to get some information from behind the scenes on some of these players, and some information, hopefully publicly on the record from different, GMs, decision makers, asking what they think about these guys. The first guy and the most, clearly the most touted, Charles Omenihu. Look, he's a lock to be the first off the board of all these Texas players. And I think he could go as early as maybe early round two at this point, based on the strength of his Senior Bowl. Just a great week at the Senior Bowl. Those 36-inch arms were the longest that they'd measured since DJ Fluker, which I believe the tackle out of Alabama, I believe that was 2013 or something. You guys can check me on that. All 13 of you that listen. But those long arms, and also at the Senior Bowl, what they talk about is your ability to get better through the week. Like it's the Ziggy Ansah. It was like that with him. It was like that with Marcus Davenport. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I want to really hammer it in. If you're one of these edge guys that gets better and better through the week, that learns the dance through the week, NFL teams take notice. And Charles Omenihu was arguably the best edge player, maybe even probably the best defender in that game. And so that was a week that made him a lot of money. It made him and his agent, Dave Mulligetta at Athletes First, both a lot of money. Because I saw him being more of a fringe sort of day two player that was just a tool that would be considered a toolsy player, and a guy that somebody's probably going to take throw a dart on in rounds two or three, to a guy that's definitely going to be going in probably round two. And maybe if you're the most optimistic Longhorns fan, you could say that maybe round one. I don't expect him to test well, though. His arms, like I mentioned, 36 inches. He's not going to put up a huge bench press number. That's just that's not Charles. That's like that. It's not going to be in the cards for him. His arms are too long. We all know that the bench press is an athletic drill where you take a bar, you let it down to your chest, you push it all the way up. It's got to touch your chest. Your arms have to lock out. They're super, super, super stingy about giving you those reps at the combine, though. And I can tell you that from personal experience, not having done it, but just, you know, the last few years they've opened up that drill, not only to the media, but also to selected members of the public that were lucky enough to draw those random NFL experience tickets. You can go in and you can be, you know, 20 feet away from these guys as they're doing these drills. You just can't tweet about it if you're in the media. And they're tough, man. And Charles is not going to do well in that. He's not going to test well explosively. He's not going to have a big vertical. He's got kind of heavy, big, heavy feet. He's not going to jump high. He's not going to run fast. But where he's going to really win is where it's most important at the combine. And that's in these interviews, man. Like the combine is held in Indianapolis for really, well, a few reasons. One is people in the NFL are very, very conservative and very, very hesitant to change. And they do not like the idea of things not being, they're not being a control set from year to year. They want that 40-yard dash run in exactly the same corner of exactly the same field on that exact damn same piece of dirt, or we should say AstroTurf. I mean, exactly the same. The post-corner fade route for the wide receivers is run with the cone set in the exact same spot every year. I'm telling you, I get to go in there as a member of the Pro Football Writers of America for the last 9 years and watch those wide receiver drills. And every time when I come in there with my charting sheet, I don't ever have to change it. It's the same drill from start to finish. It starts out with the gauntlet, and then you go to the pitch, and then you go to the out route, and it's always on the same side, and then you go to the post, and then you go to the over the shoulder, and then like it's exactly the same. So that's one of the important things is you know, controlling over a period of years the exact setting in which these athletes are, you know, taking on these different drills. So you can compare in longitudinal studies. You can say, you know, over the, you know, where does this guy not compare within this class? Well, how does he compare within the last 5 classes, the last 10 classes versus historical precedent? Okay. They also do it so they have a place where they can all get together where they know that there's a shit ton of medical equipment. And because they need basically every MRI in Indy, plus the MRI machines that they bring in, plus these little body fat scanning pods, and like the NFL all pitches in. And like when you go behind the scenes, you get to see the underbelly of this stuff as you're walking through Lucas Oil. You see that this is next level shit. Like they really take these medicals seriously. They take them so seriously. Because you're investing serious money in these players. You're thinking about putting an investment in these players of now up to, you know, $30, $40 million over the first 4 years of their career. 5, if you can see, you know, with the fifth year option you get on your first round picks. So it's like, yeah, you're damn right. You're going to make sure that wonky knee isn't something where, you know, there's some sort of arthritic issue. You need to make sure that, you know, this offensive lineman looks like he plays a little bit soft. Like, you need to make sure that his amount of body fat and all this is something that your trainers can work with. And when he sheds it off, what's he going to look like then? Where's he going to get his power from? Like, you need to know these things. And the other reason is because you need a place where all the prospects can be, where all the teams can be, where they can get meetings with, I believe it's the 25 guys that they have the most questions about, that they need to meet with, they need to talk to, that they need to get on the chalkboard, they need to ask what the hell was wrong with you when you made this dumb decision and got arrested by the police? Are you still that kid? Or like, well, you know, that's what they do in these meetings. And but when you boil the NFL down and you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, you really begin to see that these organizations, these franchises, these are businesses that run no differently than any other business. You need to interview these potential workers and coworkers and see how they're going to fit into your workplace, into your culture. It's a business. This is part of the interview process. And this is where Charles is going to win. Because I could tell even at the Senior Bowl, those guys at Athletes First, Mulgeta, he didn't become the NFL's newest super agent and ex-Longhorn, by the way. I guess a lifetime Longhorn. Lives right here in Austin. My daughter had swim lessons with his kids right out there in Westlake. You don't get to be at the top of your industry by doing dumb stuff. And it would be a dumb thing not to prepare all these guys with their interviewing skills for both the media and for the teams. And Charles, he's a great kid anyway. And so when you're a great kid and you really are, great kid. He's smart. He's polished on how he's going to handle his interviews. He's going to do a great job. He's going to impress some team. And so that's what I expect from him. I don't expect him to test specifically well, except in that all important test, which is going to be the team interviews. golly, excuse me. I need a cough button here, like we get on radio. Lil Jordan Humphrey, dude. I just went back and watched some Lil Jordan Humphrey film so I could get it from a different perspective than it is during the regular season. Well, all I'm doing is just like I'm like a film charting robot that just, you know, watches these plays over and over and, you know, says, you know, 84, dig route, blah, blah, blah. You go back and watch him, and I just remember there were times that guy's just got the baller gene. He's a really, really, really good player. I think that he is not going to blaze in the 40-yard dash. And that's what gets people talking the most. I mentioned in my column about this stuff, that like, nobody talked about Cortland Sutton's size-adjusted agility, right, from the 20-yard shuttle and from the three-cone. Like, nobody does that. So, you know, it's the 40-yard dash that has all the pop and the sizzle, maybe the vertical. Lil Jordan, I don't think he's going to pop in either of those things. I put the over-under on his 40 time at 4.58. I think that's right in there. I think if he looks better than 4.58 and he gets into that 4.55, if he gets into the 4.55 or under range, wheels up. Where he's going to shine the most, though, and I can't wait to watch him in this aspect live there in Lucas Oil from up in the PFWA press box, is in the on-field drills. I'll be able to, you know, put my evaluation of him up against 9 years of other evaluations because, hey, maybe I'm a little bit old and crotchety and conservative like these scouts. Maybe I like it too. Every route run the same way. Because since I've charted every single route from there live inside Lucas Oil, I'll be able to see where Lil Jordan Humphrey ranks with his ability to break down at the route's transition point, the way he can drop his hips, how he reaches out and snatches the football, the way the football sounds. Is it a slap when it hits his hands, or is it like the Odell Beckham like sucking vacuum hands? So that's what I expect out of him. I think he'll look really good in the gauntlet drill too, just because of his hands, his tracking, his adjustment, and his framing ability. That's going to show itself in the gauntlet to some degree in the post corner fade. So that's what I'm expecting from Lil Jordan Humphrey, over under 4.58 seconds and a really good on field session. For cornerback Chris Boyd, a tough final season at Texas, a very tough Senior Bowl. Just something inside me tells me that there could be a big week on tap in Indy. Like, if you look at Chris Boyd, he's the kind of guy who just in a standpoint, like when he's not matched up with a wide receiver across from him, he's an easy type of player to fall in love with. I mean, he's got this muscle bound upper body. So I think he's probably gonna be one of these like DBs that does a bunch on the bench. He's probably gonna run pretty fast because as far as his straight line speed, his straight line speed is good. I just call it a hunch. I just think after a season filled with disappointments that Chris Boyd through the combine and through the pro day phase of this stuff where he's not matched up on anybody, he's not getting burned, he's not showing the way these guys can separate on him, he's not showing these false steps as he gets in, as he gets into his T-step and his various recovery steps. I think that's when he'll gain momentum again. But I don't, I mean, that Senior Bowl was rough. I don't think he's going to get into day two. even though he was talked about by many as a guy that could be like a sleeper first round pick, you know, at points during the 2018 season, which I thought was, you know, completely cockamamie. Now, Devontae Davis, his tape is not good from 2018. It's just, he was just, I'm beginning to think, though, that this is kind of a weak DB group, like the 2019 class. And there are times where Devontae Davis this year, at least he flashed some unquestionable natural, athleticism, maybe not his natural instincts, right? But he was consistently inconsistent. I will say, though, man, like, Devontae Davis in that number 18 jersey, he used to remind me of the defense's version of Tyrone Swoops. Not just because he wore number 18 and he was just like this big, bad, tall, just ridiculous looking athlete of a dude. And I was like, dude, this guy looks like you get him mixed up with Swoops with how big he is. Like he's a big, long 6'2" and with those long arms, and you can't teach it. And he had his ups and he had his downs, but they were big ups. So I just want people to remember, you know, and not to make the mistake of forgetting via selection bias that I mean, Devontae Davis flashed big at times. So I think just given his size, given his ball skills, which are very good, he's going to look very good in the on-field drills. And I just think he has the explosive potential. He's going to test well. At last year's combine, Derwin James was the only DB that was over 6'1" to register a sub-4.5 40 time. Davis is 6'2", and look, I'm not comparing him to Derwin James by any stretch of the imagination, but I can see him running close to a 4.5. Like Devontae Davis is fast, and I can see him jumping through the roof. I believe his vertical, whenever he went through the camp circuit in high school back in Florida, was like 33 inches. I'll put the over-under on a 4.54 40 time and a 37.5-inch vertical, which that's a 37.5-inch is basically 1.5 inches better than the most recent five-year historical precedent. Over the last 5 years, DBs, and you got to remember, a bunch of these DBs are 5'9", 180, right? They're the LaMarcus Joiners of the world and stuff like that. I mean, a lot easier for those guys to get up, you know, above the rim than a big, big dude like Devontae Davis. But I think that Devontae Davis is going to be better than expected there in that realm. Finally, Gary Johnson. And all I know is he's going to blow the doors off the place. Whenever you look at I saw a study one time that this mathematician did on the very esteemed website called Reddit.com. But He had backtested this model and made a lot of sense, and it was for X track runners from high school, college, etc., and their track times, how they correlated with their NFL 40 times. So here's how it went. It's just as a general kind of rule of thumb, okay? If you're gonna run a 4.2, that's like a 9.8 as far as a 100 meter time. A 4.3, that's like a 10.27, right? Give or take. A 4.4, that's like a 10.64. A 4.5 is a 10.95 as far as 100 meter. So when you look at last year, Malik Jefferson was the fifth fastest linebacker in Indianapolis, and he ran a 4.58. And now we all know, thanks to the fact that we've seen these two line, Malik Jefferson and Gary Johnson line up next to each other hundreds of times, that Gary Johnson is much faster than Malik Jefferson. I don't think anybody's going to question that. I mean, and we know also, thanks to Tom Herman telling us 30 times and constantly harping on it, we know that Gary Johnson ran a 10.59 100-meter dash without blocks, right? Herman always said, without blocks. So if we take that into consideration and go back to this, we see that 10.64 equals a 4.4 flat, give or take. So that means Gary Johnson, and would you really be that surprised if Gary Johnson went sub 4.4? And if he did go sub 4.4, let me just say it. I mean, Shaquem Griffin last year at 4.38, ran a 4.38. That broke the record for the fastest linebacker in combine history. And I saw Shaq Griffin all week at his Senior Bowl. And I saw him, and he lined up at safety. He lined up all over the place. He lined up outside. He lined up inside. He was very, very, very fast. And of course you noticed him because he only had one hand, right? He was very fast. I get it. But I've seen a ton of Gary Johnson, too. I've seen more Gary Johnson than I've seen of Shaquem Griffin. And Gary Johnson, from what I can tell, at least from an on-field functional speed perspective, is the faster player. So my bold prediction is that Gary Johnson will break the combine record for linebackers in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine that was set last year by Shaquem Griffin. Of all of these players, the one that seemed to have just snuck into Indy is going to be the one that breaks the record and resets history.